Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Volume.
Get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers who deposit $5 or more can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 back in a bonus bet. I was looking at NBA futures this morning. The Golden State Warriors are plus 5,500 right now on DraftKings to win the title. So if you believe in them, that's a big number. And Denver, I have Denver as my championship favorite, and they're still the second best odds on DraftKings right now at plus 450. So lots of good NBA bets to look at over the course of the end of the season. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code HOOPS. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 if your first bet loses. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no sweat bet per new customer issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope all of you guys had an incredible week. We have a absolutely jam-packed show today. I'm going to start with some follow-up thoughts after looking into some numbers from last night's matchup between the Celtics and the Nuggets. After that, we're going to talk about the Dallas Mavericks getting a much-needed win against the Miami Heat on the strength of their defense. Talk about that game from the perspective of both teams. After that, the Minnesota Timberwolves got a huge win on the road in Indiana. Absolutely monster night from Anthony Edwards. First game without Karl Anthony Towns in the lineup. Some interesting stuff coming out of that side of things. At the end, I know I'm a little late to the party here, but I want to talk a little bit about the Lakers and their struggles against the Sacramento Kings and what I took away from that game. Then at the end of the show, in the show last night, I had a bunch of questions around the league, but a lot of follow-up questions from that Nuggets-Celtics game. So I'm going to hit that at the tail end of the show. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to the Volume's YouTube channel, to the Hoops Tonight YouTube channel, so you don't miss any more of our videos. Don't forget about our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight. It also is super helpful if you leave a rating and a review on that front. Follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT so you guys don't miss any film threads that I do from time to time or show announcements. And then last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in the YouTube comments so we can keep hitting them throughout the rest of the season. All right, let's talk some basketball. So there was a moment at the end of the game where Stan Van Gundy last night went on this rant about how Boston's one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league and how they are going to shoot better eventually and that this is super encouraging. Now, here's the thing. I actually was encouraged on the Boston front last night. My major takeaway last night was that Denver solidified and proved that they deserve to be the favorite and that they would be the safest bet to win the title this season. But it also proved that Boston is capable of beating them. There is a pathway there that exists for Boston that doesn't exist for most of the teams in the NBA. So I did think there was a lot of reason for optimism on the Boston front after last night's game. That said, I do not think it comes down to making shots. Matter of fact, I remember as I was watching the game, I was like, I kind of felt like it was a classic rock fight game. It felt like both teams didn't shoot particularly, especially well on jump shots. And I didn't think that that played a significant role in the game. I just thought that Denver got better shots closer to the rim. And usually with the Synergy, the app that I use, I can watch film a lot the night of, but I can't really get into numbers until the following morning when their crews go in and they sort through all the play types and actually put all the data together, right? And so here's a couple of pieces of information from last night's game that I thought were interesting. Boston took 45 jump shots. Denver took 31. That's just a difference in their shot profile. They get a lot of shots close to the rim. Boston got 1.022 points per jump shot, so a little over a point per shot. Denver got 0.774. So they did not shoot well compared to Boston. Both teams attempted 11 unguarded jump shots, according to Synergy. Boston got 15 points on their 11 unguarded shots. Denver got 6 on their 11 unguarded shots. Over the course of the season, Boston's typically a little over 1.3 points per unguarded jump shot. Denver's usually a little over 1.2. So Boston is a better unguarded jump shooting team than Denver is by a small margin, but Boston actually shot above their perceived average on those types of shots, and Denver actually shot substantially below. As a matter of fact, for the two games that these two teams played against each other, Boston shot really well on unguarded jump shots in their first matchup, and they took 18 of them in Boston and scored 30 points on them, unguarded. Again, that's not all the jump shots. It's just the ones that were high-quality open jump shots. So in the two matchups between the two teams, Boston has scored 1.55 points per unguarded jumper, which is way above their season average, and Denver has scored 0.84 points per unguarded jumper, which is way below their season average. So like that to me is not to what you lean on if you're Boston. You're not going to shoot better against Denver. You might have a game in Boston or a couple games in Boston in an NBA Finals series where you just get crazy hot like we know Boston can, and they might win by 10, 15 points in those games. But more or less in the knockdown, dragout, fist fights of games that these teams are going to generally engage in if they meet in the finals, Boston shot better than Denver did. So that to me isn't the swing factor there. Denver overcame their poor shooting because of their ability to consistently generate high quality shots around the rim, just like they did down the stretch with all those actions. The case for Boston is what Jaylen Brown was able to do with Aaron Gordon. Because, you know, it's interesting. I was talking with Adam Mars about this earlier today. I went on his show for about an hour, and we talked about this game and a couple other games from last night. Make sure you guys check out the YouTube channel is called All NBA. It's the show that he does with Tim Legler. So go there if you guys want to see that. But I was talking with him about this earlier today. But like Aaron Gordon's an interesting defensive player because he's got the length to contest shots on the likes of Kevin Durant, right? And he's got the strength to deal with the bully ball stuff that you see from guys like Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James. But it's the speed and strength of Jaylen Brown that allowed him to consistently beat him off the dribble and finish around the rim on him. I thought that was an interesting matchup. That was a huge silver lining for Boston. If Jason Tatum can meet that aggression and help inflict his physicality on the game, that's the path. It's not we're going to make more shots. That's not the pathway to beating Denver. You outshot them in the two games and you lost both games. Denver is just as likely to have games where they shoot much better as you are. So to me, it most likely comes down to if Boston wins a series like this, it's taking advantage of their physical advantages on the perimeter. So those are just a couple of quick thoughts. We're going to get more into Boston-Denver at the end of the show when we get into our mailbag. All right, moving on to Dallas-Miami. So this was a game that Dallas desperately needed coming off. I think they had lost 5 of their previous 6 games. The got off to a rough start. Luka was really disengaged defensively early, was getting taken advantage of by Nikola Jovic in help and recover situations on rolls to the basket. He got back cut along the baseline for a layup. There was a play in transition defense where Luka was the guy back who was underneath the basket, and he let Bam sneak right behind him, and Jimmy threw a pass right over the top to him because he just wasn't paying attention and gave up a layup and kind of trickled down the roster. They had a really bad defensive quarter, and Duncan Robinson came out red hot. I think he hit four threes in the first quarter, and then Dallas was kind of cold. Luka was missing his step back jump shot to start the game. His kickout threes weren't going in, and so they dug themselves in a little bit of a hole there, right? And like at the end of the day, like getting humiliated sometimes is a great motivator. Like for six games before that game against Miami, Dallas had a defensive rating of 127.3. That was 5 points per 100 possessions worse than anyone else in the league over that span. That's a substantial problem right there. They were giving up, I've talked about it on the show before, but a lot of overhelping and bad off-ball defense leaving shooters open. They were giving up 23 wide open threes per game. Again, according to NBA.com, and a wide open three is a defender at least 6 feet away. They were giving up 23 of those per game over that six-game span, which was the third worst in the league over that span. In the first quarter, they had a 144 defensive rating, and I think it just finally woke them up. And they finally locked in. They had one of their best defensive quarters the last few weeks in that second quarter against Miami as they got back into the game. They had a 111 defensive rating in the second half, which is perfectly fine. They dominated the glass in the second half. They grabbed 88% of available defensive rebounds, which is awesome. The biggest play of the game was a rebound play. It was a missed three where Maxi Kleber kind of looped around the baseline and tapped it out, and that got swung to Kyrie Irving in the left corner for a big three. I think it put him up 109-104. If I remember correctly, it was like the biggest shot of the game off of an offensive rebound. They dominated the game with their athleticism in the throughout the rest of the game. That is one of their big advantages. Perimeter speed. They can contend on the perimeter defensively, and they've got guys, they've got athletes under the rim that can make plays. Huge defensive plays from Derek Lively on Bam Adebayo under the rim late. Just stonewalled him twice. They were two of the biggest stops as they built that little bit of an advantage that they had. And then a timely shot making, not just from Luka and Kyrie, but also from Dante Exum. Kyrie, we talked about the huge three off of the tap out from Maxi Kleber. He also had a play off of the right wing where he got Bam Adebayo on the switch, hit him with a nasty hesitation move, beat him off the dribble, and then elevated for a tough floater over the top. And then Luka, we talked about that step back three moving to his left a few weeks ago. Another really nice drifting to the right. I should say step back to his right, I meant to say, but over his left shoulder. That's where I always get that confused. So like over when you're doing a movement shot, when you're moving to your right, you're shooting over your left shoulder as you're trying to square up in midair. And Luka made a pivoting over his left shoulder three as a rescue shot with about 6 minutes left. That was unbelievable. Hit a ridiculous step back three over Jimmy Butler to put him up five late in the game. He actually made four step back threes in this game, which is big because he hasn't been shooting as well on his step back three as of late as he did to start the year. But the biggest sequence of the game was because Jason Kidd went with a really interesting lineup down the stretch. He went with Maxi Kleber at the four next to Derek Lively and then Dante Exum at the three instead of someone like a Josh Green, right? And the Mavs started running these ball screen actions with Dante Exum, and Exum was slipping out of them when they were blitzing Luka, and he slipped out to the left wing and knocked down a big three late in the shot clock. And then one of the biggest shots in the game, that little turnaround jump shot he hit in the lane, a really well-defended possession. Luka draws a blitz, hits Dante Exum on the slip. They stonewall him at the rim. Everything else is shut down. This is that high-level, I sometimes refer to it as high-level closeout attacking, but really it's like shot-making from role players, right? It's like the ability to, when a possession is really well-defended and you've been chased off the three-point line and the rim isn't there as an option and there isn't an easy kick-out pass for the next sequence or maybe the shot clock is winding down, and you need someone that can just take and make a difficult shot. And Dante Exum was able to pivot over his right shoulder and take a tough mid-range pull-up jump shot and make it. And it was a huge possession in the game as they got out of there with the win. I really liked that lineup late, not just because Exum is just a little bit more high level in terms of some of his shot making ability off the bounce than a guy like Josh Green, which I think was an advantage as they were blitzing Luka, but also just the size of that lineup between Lively and Kleber and Exum in that front court. They made it more difficult for Jimmy Butler in particular to kind of bully his way to his spots. Jimmy hit one step back jumper going to his right where he kind of shouldered Maxi in the chest and got a little bit of separation and knocked down a shot, but they defended Jimmy Butler really well in this game. I liked the combination of Luka and Kyrie as your shot creators with a lot of size and defensive personnel off of them, especially when you rely so much on Luka and Kyrie, tough shot making anyway. And I thought that was an interesting group to go with at the end of the game. Got a lot of stops, got a big win down the stretch. On the Miami front, Terry Rozier, by far his best game since joining the Heat. He had 27 points and 11 assists, hit 5 threes, made a bunch of big plays in pick and roll at the end of the game. He's actually been pretty good in pick and roll in general since coming to Miami, despite Terry Rozier shooting 41% from the field and 30% from three since coming to Miami. He's actually been a pretty good shot creator for them. He's run 173 pick and rolls and ISOs that have led to 183 points. It's 1.06 points per possession, which is pretty damn solid shot creation. That's all including passes, by the way. And again, like when you factor in the fact that he hasn't even really started hitting shots yet, up until last night, that's super encouraging because that means that there's another level that he can get to on that side of the floor. And then I thought one of the biggest swing factors in this game was Bam Adebayo. Again, this is something I've talked about all season. On the season, he is shooting below 50% on shots that are inside of 5 feet from the rim, but aren't dunks because he has like 100 dunks this year. If you take the dunks out, the misses and the makes, and you just look at every shot he takes within 5 feet of the rim, he misses them more than half the time. He was just 5 for 12 in this game against Dallas in the paint. 3 times late, he got stonewalled at the rim and wasn't able to make a sort of push shot or hook shot over the top. That is a huge difference maker. Like we talked about that with Jokic all night last night, but like when you're a big man, having that little pop shot or floater or hook shot or, you know, kind of like in traffic type of layup to go to is such a huge part of shot making for the center position. And that continues to be something that makes Miami easier to guard. If you just keep Bam from dunking, he'll probably miss. Like statistically, he's more likely to miss than he is to make. And it just allows teams to get away with things in a coverage element of defense that they shouldn't be able to get away with otherwise. And that's something to keep an eye on the Bam front. And then Jimmy just, he's been playing really well. They got kind of a rare bad Jimmy Butler game in this one. But Jimmy's been playing super, super well as of late. So there, again, a lot of encouraging stuff, especially on the Terry Rozier front, but just a disappointing loss, especially against a Mavs team that's reeling, a game that you got off to a big lead early. And I just was really disappointed in some of the shot-making stuff from Bam late in the game.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Does the craziness of everyday life leave you feeling stressed and shedding? Since having kids, have you started to see a little more of your scalp? Are you unhappy with your hairline? When it comes to thinning hair, there are many root causes at play, and Nutrafol addresses them through a multi-targeted, whole-body approach. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, and faster-growing hair with less shedding. Physician-formulated, with drug-free ingredients, Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting key root causes of thinning: stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism through whole body health. Take their hair wellness quiz at Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. With Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription or doctor's visits required. Free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day and you'll see results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker and healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled N-U-T-R-A-F-O-L.com, promo code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code HOOPS.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
All right, moving on to Pacers Wolves. This was a huge and much needed win for the Wolves. Four straight pull-up jump shots at the end of the game. Mike Conley out of the left corner hits a jab step pull-up three going to his right. And then Anthony Edwards hits a pull-up three in pick and roll, and then a couple of tough pull-up jump shots in ISO in the middle of the floor that end up icing the game. Some defensive mistakes kept it close. They lost Miles Turner on a kind of like a pin screen out of the right corner for three. And then Kyle Anderson fouled Aaron Nesmith out of the left corner. That kept it close. But off of an Ant missed free throw, one of the very best defensive plays I've ever seen. That, you know, Ant said after the game, he's jumped higher than he's ever jumped in his life. There is a level of desperation that you can get out of a block that you might not get out of a dunk in terms of jumping ability. It's actually funny when I think back to the highest I've ever jumped in my life, the possession I think of is a defensive play in particular. I won't get into the details, but it's funny because I remember it was a big possession where like I just was jumping as high as I possibly could to try to make a play, right? And obviously Ant is like that, but one of the best athletes in the history of basketball. So like for him, it just looks completely outrageous. Hits his head on the rim, hits his shoulder on the backboard. Every single time I open up my phone, I see a new angle of this Anthony Edwards block, and it looks more ridiculous than the last one. Just an unbelievable play. And a win is a win is a win. But I want to zoom in on the Kyle Anderson at the power forward spot thing, because this was super concerning to me at the end of the game. So obviously, Karl Towns torn meniscus, getting some surgery, going to be out until the beginning of the Western Conference playoffs at a minimum. Big bummer, obviously, off of having one of the best seasons of his career and just how good this Timberwolves team has been. But the question becomes, where do you go from here? How do you put together lineups when Karl Towns has been your four in your best groups all year long? And let's first talk about how bad the Kyle Anderson experience was, because I thought it was just a complete and total disaster. On the defensive end of the floor, Tyrese Halliburton was picking on him on switches. First one I watched, the one where Tyrese made like the kind of scoop shot off the glass, I'm like, that's kind of well defended. It's a tough shot. Tyrese is one of the best players in the league. Like that's tough. But then there was another switch a few possessions later where he got absolutely dusted, and then Rudy Gobert had to foul him. Then they tried hedging and recovering with him, and he just lunged and reached in too hard and got himself way out of position. And then Siakam broke wide open on the slip. Tyrese hit him, and he ended up going up and dunking. I can't remember who it was that he dunked on. I think it might have been it wasn't Gobert. I can't remember. It might have been Jaden McDaniels that he dunked, or it might have been Ant actually that he dunked on. I just can't remember. But he slipped out of that hedge and recover and got a huge dunk. And then he was the guy who fouled Aaron Nesmith out of the left corner. So like, that's the thing, is like Kyle Anderson has some offensive limitations. So if you're going to go to him at the power forward spot and as like a defensive option, he's got to be impactful defensively. And he just wasn't. He was getting picked on and making mistakes. And that's just not going to cut it. And then on the offensive end of the floor, you can kind of put two and two together. Like, here comes Ant down in transition. I clipped this play and put it on my Twitter feed. You guys can see it at @_JasonLT. But Ant's coming down the floor in transition, trying to drive the basket. Kyle Anderson just kind of meanders into the dunker spot on the left side of the floor. And Rudy Gobert meanders into the dunker spot on the right side of the floor. And there's just a throng of bodies there. And it's just, there's no space to operate. And he ends up in trouble in some traffic. There was a possession where Indy threw a hard double at Anthony Edwards, and it just was no advantage because nobody needs to guard Kyle Anderson. And as long as you've got somebody underneath the rim, he's not going to hurt you there, right? And like, it just was a big problem on the offensive end of the floor. And then you weren't getting the benefit of the defensive end of things. And so that's going to be something they're going to need to figure out, because my best guess is it's got to be matchup related. Like, it might be one of those things where it's like, okay, this team is smaller, more perimeter oriented. Let's go with Nikhil Alexander-Walker and just go small. And now I've got Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Ant out there, and I can really defend on the perimeter, right? Or against a more bruising team that doesn't have as much perimeter speed, you know, now like against the Lakers, for instance, maybe it's better to go with Naz Reid in the Sunday night. I think it's on Sunday, but in the game on Sunday or the next game that they have against the Lakers in Crypto.com Arena. That might be a game where you go with Naz Reid at the power forward spot. But like, you got to go with either speed and quickness or shooting. I don't think you can go with a guy in Kyle who's not good enough at either. Right. And so that's going to be something that they're going to have to figure out as the season progresses. And then finally, like once again, and again, we can blame Kyle Anderson all we want for this, but this has been an issue all season. They won the game because they made four straight pull-up jump shots. Mike Conley made one out of the left corner and made a pull-up three in pick and roll, and he made two tough step back jump shots in the lane. Like at the end of the day, that's really what it depends on for Minnesota, which is why their late game offense is so concerning. It really comes down to can Ant and Mike Conley make tough pull-up jump shots because of the fact that Rudy Gobert is not good enough at either beating switches or catching and finishing around the rim in traffic to make teams pay for helping. You know, Jaden McDaniels is not a guy you have to guard super closely. Now that Karl Towns isn't in the group, it's even harder to do this because you're going to have someone out there that in all likelihood, that's a little bit less of a threat from the three-point line. And so this has been an issue all season for Minnesota. And again, like last night it worked because the shots went in, but like it's a lot to ask for Anthony Edwards to make tough pull-up jump shots time and time again. You know, it can work in a one-game sample, but again, like among the high-volume pull-up shooters in the league, Anthony Edwards falls more in line with the Jason Tatum types, which guys that take a lot of them that aren't efficient, than compared to the guys that are super efficient, the James Hardens and the Jalen Williamses and the Steph Currys and those kinds of guys, right? He's just not on that level as a pull-up shooter. And so that's where it gets a little bit concerning. All right, moving on to Lakers-Kings. This was a game that happened on Wednesday night. I was texting with Sam Vecenie after Lakers-Thunder. And I told you guys I was having like a little bit of fun at his expense because I think there's like at least a coin flip chance that the Lakers don't even get out of the play-in tournament, let alone make noise in the playoffs. They're not a team I believe in anymore ever since they didn't make a trade at the deadline. That said, like that matchup specifically against the Thunder is one I've always liked for the Lakers. And so I texted Sam and I was having some fun at his expense and, you know, haven't taken a little victory lap. But I texted him right after that and I was like, but I think I was like, I'm nearly 100% sure they're going to get smashed by the Kings and that their defense is going to get absolutely shredded. And the reason for that is something that I've talked about a lot on the show. I talked about it after the Warriors-Bucks game, matchups. Matchups to me are the main determining factor for wins and losses for basically every team outside of that Boston and Denver tier. Once you get below those two, every single team you run into has a certain strength and a certain weakness and multiple strengths and multiple weaknesses. And really, it just depends on how those strengths and weaknesses kind of link with their opponent, right? And like, that's the thing. Like, there's a reason why the Lakers have had success against the Thunder. There's a reason why the Lakers have had success against the Clippers. There's a reason why the Lakers have had success against the Suns this season. It's because in those particular matchups, those are teams that have guys that have shifty approach to offense and take a lot of pull-up jump shots. And the Lakers do have a lot of length. They don't have a lot of perimeter speed, but Austin is a guy that he's not short by any stretch of the imagination. D'Angelo Russell's not short by any stretch of the imagination. They're just slower. Torian Prince is not short. He's just slower, right? And so against those types of matchups, they can slide their feet and be disciplined and offer a late contest and get teams to miss. And then on the other end of the floor, because those teams aren't overly fast, they can have some success scoring the basketball. Here's the problem with Sacramento. Sacramento is not a shifty shot-making team. They have speed guards. It is like, we're coming at you like this all game long. And like I was impressed that the Lakers even jumped out to the lead that they jumped out to. But then like as soon as that, right around the end of the first quarter, and heading into that second quarter run, they brought in Torian Prince and put him on Malik Monk. And then they started running action where basically like a version of Spain pick and roll where they'd have like De'Aaron Fox come off a ball screen and then they have Malik Monk back screen for the big man as he's Alex Len as he's rolling to the basket. And they were just putting the Lakers in a blender. Jackson Hayes was on the floor in this group. And they kind of got into a rhythm a little bit. And then from there, Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox are both playing with confidence. And when they're playing with confidence, they see tissue paper when they see Austin Reeves. They see tissue paper when they see D'Angelo Russell. They see tissue paper when they see Taurean Prince on the perimeter. And then what happens, because like the Kings are an interesting team in the sense that like we think of them as like a high-powered offense who's going to outscore people. And that was kind of what they were in the regular season last year. But really, when you look to their success in the postseason last year when they won games against Golden State, and this year, they win when they win with defense. Like when you look at their opponent point totals, it's when they keep teams below that threshold. I think it's like 115 points or whatever. When they hold teams down, their win percentage is gigantically better than what it is when they give up large scoring games. They have not outscored teams very well, but they have been able to, when they really lock in, get stops. I talked about this last night with Jaylen Brown about like discovering your superpower. That extends to the team level as well. Understand what your superpower is as a team. And for Sacramento, it's speed. On the offensive end, we discovered last year, it's not Kevin Huerter and Keegan Murray coming off of ball screens. It's not Sabonis bullying his way to the basket. It's no one can keep Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox in front off the dribble. That is their superpower. And then on the defensive end of the floor, they have a ton of speed. And like when you add in Keon and you add in Davion Mitchell, like they have speed at the guard spot on the defensive end, four or five guys deep. And what's crazy is like you could see it because they had a really bad defensive quarter to start in the first quarter. And then when Fox and Monk got going, like you could tell it energized the team and they started defending. They held the Lakers to 20 points in that second quarter. And it was like a runaway freight train. One of the craziest runs I've ever seen to go from being down 18 or whatever to basically blowing out the Lakers. Like it was like a reverse blowout. It was completely insane. But again, this is why I talk about matchups so much. The reason why I wanted the Lakers to go out and get guard athleticism, which was the number one thing I talked about after the Denver Nuggets series last year. They need someone at the guard spot that is athletic enough, but not too small to deal with the likes of like a Jamal Murray, a big, strong athlete. It's why I wanted Bruce Brown this summer. So I said at the deadline, I'd rather have Bruce Brown than DeJounte Murray. That specific archetype is a specific type of player that the Lakers just do not have. And so because of that, that's the thing. The Lakers went to the Western Conference Finals last year as currently constructed, more or less, obviously without Dennis Schroeder and with some other role players in the group. They beat the Warriors relatively easily. They beat the Grizzlies relatively easily, right? Like they won in the same exact fashion throughout, never lost a game at home in those two series. The reason why is because those teams were not able to capitalize on the weaknesses that the Lakers have, right? And so as we go into the Denver matchup, they run into a team that you desperately need size and athleticism at the guard position to defend in those Jokic-Murray actions. It was a huge problem. And it was one thing against the Grizzlies when the Grizzlies don't shoot the ball well enough off the ball, and they were able to just completely pack the paint. It was one thing against the Warriors when everybody not named Steph went cold, and they were able to just pack the paint and throw the kitchen sink at Steph. But as soon as they ran into a team that brought real shot creation at the guard spot with Jamal Murray, obviously the two-man game with Jokic, and the off-ball spacing to punish them for helping, it exposed their inability to guard actions one-on-one and two-on-two. That is why I've preached about that nonstop. I've never been of the belief that the Lakers can't beat certain teams as currently constructed. It's like I talked about with the Thunder. That's a matchup that works really well for the Lakers. They are a shifty shot-making perimeter group, and they're too small on the interior, and they're too inexperienced. The Lakers would eat those guys up in a playoff series, in my opinion. But these really fast teams that also have the spacing off the ball can cause problems for them. And we haven't even got to the center position. Sabonis kicked Anthony Davis's ass in that game. Anthony Davis has consistently struggled against the big bruising centers, guys like Sabonis, guys like Zubac, guys like Nurkic, guys like Jokic, because he's got a high center of gravity. They can shove him off of his spot. Sabonis was finishing through Anthony Davis at will. He was bullying him on the offensive glass. It was a huge problem in that game. That is, so the Kings just in general are a really bad matchup for the Lakers because Sabonis is a bad matchup for AD, and their guards, like the Lakers guards, are just absolutely hopeless to guard them. And like, that's the thing. Like, I saw a lot of Lakers fans focusing on Darvin Ham and lineups. And don't get me wrong, I've been one of the guys complaining about that all year. Do not agree with everything that Darvin Ham did in this game. I would have had a lot more Max Christie. Torian Prince on Malik Monk is something I never in a million years would have done. But like it doesn't really matter. They don't have the personnel. You could have thrown your best punch in that game and you still would have gotten your butt kicked. I mean, I shouldn't say your best punch, but your best tactical punch. Because from a personnel standpoint, the Kings just have significant advantages over the Lakers. And that's the group that the Lakers fall into now. Everything's going to be about matchups for them. Whatever tiny sliver of a hope they have is going to be about catching the right types of teams along the way. If they end up in a play-in game on the road in Sacramento, I would be stunned if they won. You know, but like, if they ended up on the road in a single elimination game to get in against the Pelicans, shifty shot-making perimeter guys, and bad backline defense, I would pick the Lakers 10 times out of 10 to win that game. Right? Matchups are going to be huge. I shouldn't say 10 out of 10, because obviously if a game's in New Orleans, they could just get hot and beat you. But 7 or 8 times out of 10, I like the Lakers in that matchup. Matchups are going to be everything for this particular Lakers team. And I thought that Kings game was a perfect example of that. Going into the Bucks game tonight, it's going to be interesting because obviously that Dame matchup is a little bit tough on the perimeter, but they don't have the depth of shot creation on the perimeter that a team like Sacramento had with Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox. And so I think they might be able to piece together a better group for that matchup. And obviously they have the interior presence to kind of hang with Giannis and Brook Lopez. So that's going to be a really interesting one against the Bucks later tonight. But again, matchups are going to be everything for this Lakers team.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. All right, moving on to the mailbag, and then we'll get out of here for the day. First question. You should collab with Adam Matas from DNVR. You two are so knowledgeable about the game of basketball. First of all, thanks for the kind words about myself and also for Adam as well. I really, really enjoyed working with Adam today. It was super easy to talk basketball with. Super, super smart guy. Had a ton of fun. Went for an hour. Talked about basically a lot of the same games that we talked about today. But you can find that on the All NBA podcast YouTube feed. So go check that out. Next question. If the MVP is a race, Tatum somehow is running in the opposite direction. So this was just a funny comment, but I wanted to use it to just kind of talk about the MVP race because I saw I didn't talk about this over the last couple of weeks just simply because I didn't think it was interesting enough. But, you know, this comment kind of gave me an excuse to talk about it for a second. I never considered Tatum legitimately for MVP. And the main reason why is because, like, to me, if you're not actually in that top tier of superstars in the league, you just don't qualify for the MVP conversation. And like, that's the thing. Like, Tatum is the best player on the best regular season team in the league, but there's a couple of pieces of context. One, he's playing for, in my opinion, the most talented starting five in the league. Two, Boston is playing in an Eastern Conference that is really weak at the bottom and has a lot of opportunities to just rake up, like to rack up like massive wins that inflate stats and inflate advanced metrics. For instance, I'm sure you guys saw this stat after the game. After last night, Boston is 33-7 against the Eastern Conference. They are 15-7 against the Western Conference because the Western Conference, top to bottom, just has significantly more talent down. The East top is very talented, but the bottom of the East has a lot of, like, you know, automatic wins, so to speak. And that, I think that's reflected league-wide in records between Eastern Conference and Western Conference teams. But, like, I never, to me, the standings reflect more just how much better Boston is than the rest of the East. And then as far as the MVP race goes, like, he's the best player on the team, but he's not as good as Jokic. He's not as good as Luka. He's not as good as Giannis. And those guys are just doing more with less. And so for me, like, I never really realistically considered Tatum for that MVP spot. Next question. Hi, Jason. Love the content from Australia. Watching the Luka Kyrie pairing Cook defenses is great viewing, but it also got me wondering about the future of pairing two star guards as building blocks. We've seen Fox and Halliburton thrive separately. Questions about the Trey Murray and Mitchell Garland combo as a long-term solution, and even a young potential superstar duo like Cade and Ivy raise the issue whether they can thrive together down the line. If you were coaching two young star guards in the making, what skills would you prioritize them to focus on to maximize their own team success? And what potential red flags would you look out for should they success that would suggest they're better off on separate teams? Having followed you for a bit, I'll guess pull-up shooting is right there. Thanks for these shows. Always learn something new every episode. Thanks for supporting the show. Here's the thing. As it comes down to the two guards thing, it really just comes down to, like, if you're the expression, like, you are who you can guard, like, you can have two star guards as long as they're different archetypes. So for instance, like, if you have a skill guard, let's say that you had Steph Curry, but let's say your two was like prime Dwayne Wade, who's like one of the best defensive players in the league and a real downhill athlete. That, I think, is a pairing of star guards that would work because they have a lack of redundancy. They don't step on each other's toes. They bring different things to the table. That is a defensive backcourt that can fly. Does that make sense? So, like, in general, when I'm looking at any star duo, I want one of them to be really good at different stuff than the other guy. Take Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, for example. Like, Jamal Murray is this, like, perimeter shot-making piece, and Nikola Jokic is this physical imposition around the rim piece and playmaking piece, right? They perfectly complement each other. If you wanted a star next to Jokic, it would ideally be a guy that can run two-man game with him and hit tough over-the-top pull-up jump shots. It makes perfect sense. Think Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. LeBron was the bully ball mismatch attacking forward that brought all the athleticism and defensive tools to the table. Kyrie Irving was the guy. LeBron is the guy who loves to rest while he's playing. Kyrie Irving was the guy they could throw the basketball to, and he could go stand on the left wing, maybe shoot a catch and shoot three now and then. But Kyrie Irving can just run the offense for a brief stretch and be that skill guard, right? Like, that to me is the big piece, is you want to have a lack of redundancy. So for instance, like, let's take De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton. I do think that could have worked in the long run, but it would have required De'Aaron Fox to basically become one of the best two-way guards in the league to really focus on the defensive end of the floor. But, like, there's no doubt that could have worked in the long run, because I view Tyrese as the skill guard and De'Aaron Fox to me is like the athlete guard in that pairing. De'Aaron Fox has always been a little bit of an inconsistent defensive player, although I think he's capable of being an awesome defensive player. Next question. LOL, I'm not letting MPJ shoot, but I get your point. You close out late, make him drive so that he can finish, but he doesn't handle well. Again, I this was in reference to a point I made at the end of last night's show about how I would guard if I was Boston. Basically, I said I wouldn't want to live with Jokic and Gordon hitting shots right around the rim. I would want to bring help either from the baseline, but then bring that weak side corner guy to get inside position on Gordon and box him out and force Jokic to make a skip pass, or I'd double from the front side to force Jokic to make kickouts to the perimeter. But the main point there is, like, yeah, I don't want MPJ to shoot. But, like, MPJ, you know, I've talked about the difference between shot value in the large sample size versus shot value in the individual possession. So, for instance, an MPJ catch and shoot three. Just to make the math easy, if MPJ is wide open, let's just say he makes 50% of them, right? That's 1.5 points per shot. That's a really high percentage shot. right? I would have to shoot 75% at the rim to be on a hook shot or something, on any other type of shot, to be as efficient as Michael Porter Jr. on a catch and shoot three, right? But on the individual possession, it's only a 50% shot, right? The statistic means nothing to the individual, both in life and in basketball, in my opinion. Like, the statistic is what happens in the big picture, but on that individual possession, you're down to the field goal percentage at that point, right? So for instance, if Jokic, let's say Jokic shoots 65% on hook shots, that's a lower percentage shot by points per possession. I shouldn't say lower percentage. It's a lower value shot by points per possession than a Michael Porter Jr. wide open catch and shoot three. But on the individual possession, the Michael Porter shot, he's going to miss half the time. Whereas the Jokic shot around the basket, he's going to miss it one out of three times. And probably if you get him to miss, you brought baseline help, and Aaron Gordon's going to get an extra possession about half of those times. So like the individual possession, that around the rim stuff, is so much more valuable than the big picture stuff when it comes down to the three-point shot. So what I was saying is, obviously leaving a Michael Porter Jr. or a KCP wide open is not a good option. But here's the thing. We know Porzingis can't guard Jokic one-on-one. We know the baseline help leaves Aaron Gordon open underneath the basket. Those are super high percentage shots. So to me, it's more of a lesser of two evils kind of thing. Next question. How would you rank this version of the Nuggets among the championship-winning teams of the last 10 to 15 years? As you have said, Denver has built a near-perfect roster around Jokic, who is by far the best player in the world today. However, at what point does accumulating elite talent just outpower everything else? For instance, as good as the Nuggets are, most people wouldn't give them much of a chance against the Warriors of 2017-18, who sacrificed their roster depth to bring in KD. So I do think the Nuggets are on the same tier. I shouldn't say on the same tier. Let me put it this way. The only two teams of the last 15 years that are better than Denver are the Miami Heat team that repeated and the KD Steph Warriors that repeated. Those are the only two teams that are on their level, right? Denver's not, I don't think they deserve to be put on that level, because it's hard to win two championships in a row. And here's the thing. I think the Nuggets, I'm way higher on them than I was to start the season. I told you I'd be surprised if they didn't win the title if they were healthy, but it's still like a coin flip, right? Because like Boston has a much easier path out of the Eastern Conference. Denver could be in for some bloodbaths out West. Boston does have a lot of talent and some room for improvement. Like, Denver doesn't have as much room for improvement between now and June as Boston does. Boston can figure some shit out and get better. So like that's my point. I'm picking Denver. I think Denver is the safe bet, but there's always, it's really difficult to win NBA championships. So like, I don't want to jump the gun, and I don't think I'd ever put them above the 2017-2018 Warriors, because like, they literally were just so much better than everybody. To give you an idea, going into the 2018 season off of the 2017 championship, when they won 15 straight playoff games, the Warriors had negative odds to win the title in preseason. Meaning if you bet $100 to pick the Warriors to win the title in 2018 and they won, you would get less than $100 in winnings. That's how dominant that Golden State team was. Denver, before last night's game, I haven't looked at the odds since, before last night's game, even as good as they've looked this year, they were plus 450 to win the title on DraftKings. So that just goes to show you the difference in just the level of like talent that team had. But it was more because of like, they had two of the top three players in the league. And they had Klay Thompson, who was an awesome defensive player and the second best shooter of all time. And they had Andre Iguodala, who was the best wing defender in the league at that time. And they had Draymond Green, who was arguably the best defensive player overall in the league at that time. So like, there's kind of another level there. However, there will be an interesting conversation to have about this team and the 2012-2013 Miami Heat teams if Denver can win the title this year. And I'm inclined to pick Denver in that specific matchup, because Miami, just because of Dwayne Wade's decline, because Chris Bosh got hurt in that 2012 run. Like, I've seen a lot of talk about, there's so much talk about because of Udonis Haslam and Norris Cole coming out talking about LeBron and the Heat. And it's so funny to me, because it's just something I think people are writing some revisionist history on. on a bunch of different fronts. First of all, I think that when LeBron, like I saw a Jeff Teague quote, something about how like everyone thought that shit was weak when LeBron went to Miami. For the record, at the time, it kind of was. Like, what LeBron did going to Miami was supposed to be more or less like what KD did going to the Warriors. What saved LeBron's ass was he got humiliated the first year, which made him a better basketball player. And so he went up a crazy level. Two, Chris Bosh got hurt in the 2012 postseason, which made them have to play. It made LeBron play desperate basketball to beat Indiana and then desperate basketball to beat Boston, right? And then three, Dwayne Wade rapidly declined after the 2011 finals, was never the same player. He was a top-tier superstar in 2011, like a second-tier superstar in 2012, 2013, and like a third-tier superstar in 2014. And so as a result, LeBron's intended dominant team turned into just another one of the best teams in the league, which forced LeBron to play heroic basketball to win two championships. So now when we look back at the Miami Heat runs, we look at it as like, man, that was some unbelievable basketball from LeBron. However, Kevin Durant went to the Golden State Warriors. They stayed healthy. They absolutely murdered everybody. And so everyone looks at it differently because we never had to see KD play desperate. We never had to see KD like, holy shit, like we're down 3-2 on the road here. We got to make this happen. Holy shit, game seven against Indiana. Holy shit, game seven against San Antonio. Like, we never saw that because Golden State was just so much better than everybody. LeBron intended for that to be the case in Miami, and then it didn't break out that way, and so he had to be great. So that's kind of unrelated to what I was saying, but I just wanted to get that off my chest after the comments that were flying out around those Heatles. But that said, I will be curious to see where we rank Denver in the big picture after, if they do win the title this year, because I think that I'd be inclined to put them above those Miami Heat teams. Not that I think Jokic and LeBron at that era are in a similar tier in terms of a ceiling. But I thought that Miami Heat team wasn't as good top to bottom as this Denver team was. And so I'd probably pick Denver over them, but they got to close the deal. They got to win another title this year. Three more questions and we're out of here. Hey, Jason, love the show. Keep up the great work. I was wondering what you think the issue is with Boston's bad habits. Is it a coach or a lack of IQ? Feels like they've had the move or less. They've had more or less the same issues under three different coaches. Granted, lots of personnel changes and player growth, but still feels like the same glaring issues throughout. So Joe Mazzulla in particular, I actually talked about this a lot with Adam Otters today, but to me, the freedom is almost gone too far. So when you have five really good shot creators on the same floor together, it gets a little tough because there's not a clear hierarchy. So like for Denver, for instance, everything runs through Murray and Jokic late. Even those like early second quarter, early fourth quarter stretches, it's like Murray's just dribbling the air out of the basketball looking for his own shot the whole time. There's a lot of equal opportunity with Boston. They kind of just play basketball. And so as a result, like that continues into crunch time. It's like those two possessions that Jrue Holiday took over. Like Jrue Holiday took those two here's another question we had our last one. I don't like the fact that Jason compares Jrue taking those last shots for the Celtics to KCP taking such shots for the Nuggets, saying the Nuggets would never do that and they are more deliberate. In my opinion, KCP and Jrue Holiday are nowhere near the same players. And the fact that the Celtics have so much talent in their five-man unit, I think their offense has to be free-flowing so they can maximize each player. 100% agree throughout like certain chunks of the game, right? Like, outside of your starting groups, late first quarter, early second quarter, late third quarter, early fourth quarter, you want to be free-flowing. You want everybody playing your game. However, you run the risk when you play equal opportunity basketball of either everybody being in a rhythm or nobody being in a rhythm. And that is part of what makes Boston so hot and cold. And yeah, they've been mostly hot against the Eastern Conference, but like that's what makes them so hot and cold is they have these stretches where all of them go out of rhythm, because there isn't a clear hierarchy. So like to me, an easy solution there is I would have pet actions for your best players that I'd run at the end of the games. If that's Tatum Porzingis pick and roll, that's Derek White Porzingis pick and roll, if it's Jaylen Brown Tatum two-man game, whatever it is that you decide to do. I don't think you could do that because teams would probably just switch it. But like you got to find some sort of like hierarchy that you go to in big moments, because it makes it more likely that those players will be in rhythm in those moments. Because it's like Tatum after the game. Like, I totally disagreed with that comment from Tatum about how he wanted to kind of like, he didn't want to hijack the game. No. If Jaylen Brown is bringing it to that level, you got to meet him there. Jaylen Brown's not shooting the ball every possession down the floor. Just because he's hot doesn't mean you can't be involved. But to me, like, that's where having a clear hierarchy does make sense. You're right. Jrue Holiday's not the same type of player as KCP. And, like, he is a guy that can create a shot off the bounce at a higher level. But he's not as good as at creating a shot off the bounce as Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Derek White. So when you do that, even if he does make the shot, you're worried. Like, and he did, by the way, he made two big ones at the end of the game and it worked out. Like that's playing the results in my opinion. But being more deliberate about running pet actions for the same players in big moments at the beginning of games and at the end of games, I think would go a long way towards kind of getting them to have more consistent rhythm in those environments. Last question. With Kat's injury, how do you think Minnesota should structure their rotation? They went with Kyle Anderson, but that is a spacing nightmare for me. I would start and close with Naz Reid and then try to keep one of him or Gobert on at all times. So I talked about this a little bit in the Timberwolves segment that we did. So in case you missed that, if you're just watching the mailbag episode, go back, Timberwolves fans, we did a whole breakdown. But I would do it matchup related. Would not go with Kyle Anderson, though. I thought that was a disaster on both ends of the floor. I don't think he's good enough defensively or offensively to make up for it. Kind of was disappointed because Kyle Anderson is a guy that is capable of being very good defensively, but he just hasn't been good enough. But I would just base it on the matchup. I think there's versions of this against smaller teams where you could go with Nickeil Alexander-Walker and go with like Ant, Conley, NAW, and Jaden McDaniels alongside Gobert and just defend the hell out of the basketball. At least you know, because Nickeil is just a better offensive player than Kyle Anderson off the ball, and he can defend in space. But then there are going to be matchups that are too big and you need to go bigger. The Lakers game that's coming up on Sunday is actually a good example of this. I would go with Naz Reid because at least you have the physical imposition. He's kind of like actually a reasonable facsimile of Karl Towns, although he's not as good because he can shoot the three and he can attack closeouts. So, like, that would be what I would do. I'd base it on the matchups. But the reality is like, it is flawed options now that Karl Towns is out of the picture, which is unfortunate. All right, guys, that is all I have for today and for the rest of the weekend. As always, I sincerely appreciate you guys. Tons of good games Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But we're going to take those days off on Monday. We will be breaking down the big games from the weekend as well as power rankings. I will see you guys then.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.